T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. It'll be the best 45 minutes of your life, I promise. Doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dusty and Cam in the morning.
Man, those two really hate each other. That feud's like Biggie Tupac level. Maybe even Morgan Freeman and Shailene Woodley level.
With Dusty Hera.
I'm not hygienic. I don't wipe properly. I lack style.
And the man who accepted impermissible teriyaki benefits as a college All-American, Cam Cleland.
Why does anybody in the world ever eat anything but breakfast food?
People are idiots, Ron.
Dusty and Cam in the morning on 1080 The Fan.
Good morning and happy hump day to you, Dusty Hera, Cam Cleland. How are you doing this morning?
So there's something about July that takes me to remembering, don't get tuned up for the weather until after the 4th of July, which we're going to start getting a little toasty, but I'm pretty excited about it. You know, we've had some good days. We haven't had that hot stretch, and it sounds like it might be showing up here pretty soon.
Yeah, we're going to be hitting 90s. Coming up today, it's supposed to be 93.
Which 94? Is no big deal considering what Southern California has had up in the upper, over 100 triple digits.
Yeah, my cousin was in town over the 4th, and it was nice. It was like 85, like the 4th wasn't a nice day, but the days before and after, they were nice days. It was like 85, 86, and I saw him, he was wearing jeans and a long sleeve shirt. And I go, what are you doing? It's hot, man. And he lives down in Southern California. He's like, dude.
What are you talking about?
He goes, it's been 113 degrees down where I live.
He's like, that's Arizona hot.
He's like, this is nothing. Yeah. I was like, whoa, there's nothing up here. We're all 60 degrees and sunny. It's shorts weather in Portland, baby.
I'm telling you.
He's changed. Southern California has changed.
Well, that's because they've all moved here. Mm. And they're all up here now. All the Californians. I mean, we got one here.
Sorry.
Yeah, he just came on back up. Just take over the Northwest and do that.
I had a guy legitimately apologize to me for moving up here from California.
We'll take you. We have no problems taking you. I mean, we'll take your money.
Some
we'll
people
take
have your... problems taking us.
Why? What's the problem?
I don't know. I'm just saying some Portlanders do have problems with California.
You know what? I don't get that because really,
I don't either.
All of you here, you all came here some other way than just moving on in. I mean, you got here, it's just part of your family lineage or how you got
native?
Here. You're well, it doesn't even matter if you're a native. You
came here from somewhere else.
Which native are we talking about?
Like Native American.
Oh, gosh. All right. Yeah. Yes. All right. I'm with you there.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like native Portlander. I'm like, what the heck does that mean?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. That's different.
Yes, it is.
What I'm trying to say is eventually you're all a transplants because this city has massive amounts and that's just a melting pot. That's kind of what Portland is, and you'd be accepting. Well, open arms, California money. Come on up and make our housing more difficult.
Well, I look at it this way.
Sorry.
It validates what we've all said.
It's nice
here. It's a great place to live.
It's a great place to live.
This is a wonderful place to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Except in January.
Well, and the 3 months before and the 3 months after
January.
No.
It's not bad until after Christmas. Because Christmas, you get the holiday spirit. You can move through, you know, jingle bells.
You can deal with the weather from Thanksgiving through New Year.
You can deal with it getting dark at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, if you don't mind gray weather from October to about May, you're good.
January and February and that early March will get you.
Yeah, it will. But that's when we sit there and we go, hey, take that, Californians.
Yeah.
It's not all rosy and sunny every day. But I always think it's a great thing that more people are moving up here because we've been right all along.
Oh, we.
Trendsetters. We've lived here longer.
I don't know about you. I'm still a transplant, but I'll wee it up with
you. I'll say the Pacific Northwest as a whole.
Okay, that's fair.
You know,
I'll do
Seattle
that one. I can join
that one.
Seattle
was first to get more popular, and now it's Portland that is growing.
Just growing? We're going to have a baseball team soon. Next thing you know, you're going to get your own NFL franchise. I know I'm pieing this guy here a little bit.
Wait a minute.
That'd be a little exciting.
I forgot to write that down. Actually, we do have some news on that front. Have you seen?
Are you going to share something with me that you haven't told me about this? I'm excited for all baseball activities. I know the All-Star game's coming up.
I know, you know, Mike Barrett came on with Isaac and Souk about a month ago. And he was talking about, he goes, you know, yeah, we know that we're going to be used as a leverage play for some cities. But did you see what Tampa Bay did yesterday?
I did not know what the city of Tampa Bay did.
That, I did. That was interesting.
This is bizarre. This is like bizarro world where you're like, what are you doing? But it kind of highlights why we should be optimistic about what the Portland Diamond Project is doing. They unveiled plans for an $892 million stadium that Tampa Bay Rays did yesterday. It's beautiful. It's a dome with a translucent ceiling.
Okay.
Which,
seen that before.
By the way, the Astros tried that. Did not work.
Grass did not grow.
Well, no, they tried to go grass in there. But what also didn't work is the translucent ceiling in the Astrodome. It created a glare that outfielders like, we can't field a fly ball in here. Yeah. So they had to black out the tiles.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way.
But the Rays are going to try it. Technology hopefully is advanced to where they won't have glare.
It might be.
But they unveiled these plans. It's a beautiful new stadium, and it's supposed to be in Yarbor. I have no
idea. I've only been to Tampa to play against the Bucks, and I just flew in and flew out.
Okay, so you know this. St. Petersburg is a ways away, and that is actually where the Rays play. This stadium would be in the historic part of Tampa Bay. And they said,
where the Pirates booty.
Yeah, they said, this is going to be great for our economy, great for the people of Tampa. And then one reporter raised his hand and they said, yes, sir. And he goes, how are you guys paying for this? You know what their response was?
You.
Well, they said, well, we don't really know right now. We figured we'd unveil these plans and show the business people of Tampa what a great opportunity it would be to sponsor building this stadium.
My goodness. You don't have any money in Tampa to do it.
They've been told multiple times the city will not pay for it. So they got an architect. They did these renderings. They unveiled it. It was a big event. And they go, yeah, that's the problem.
We don't have any money.
We have no money to pay for this.
Who owns the Tampa Bay Bucks again?
Tampa Bay Rays.
Sorry, Rays. I apologize. We don't know. We don't know.
It's been a guy who's owned the team since 2005.
Okay, so it's somebody that doesn't have the deep enough pockets to say, I'm willing to just tear down this and move the team to a closer location. But here in Portland with the Portland Diamond Project, we do know that they're moving forward and they have enough pockets to say, we believe we can get a team. Now, I don't know if it's going to be a leverage play with getting a team, but no matter what, if it's an expansion or if you want to be used like what Washington, D.C. was used for years to leverage and leverage and leverage, and finally they got their expansion teams, that's okay.
Yeah.
But you're going to get one here.
Yeah.
The Beavers win the national title. The baseball here is as good as anywhere in the entire country, just proven collegiately. So you know that it's here. It's ready, primed, excited.
Well, and they say they know they're going into this fight knowing we know the city of Portland and the state of Oregon is not going to give us money outside of $150 million that were earmarked, you know, 14 years ago to build this stadium. They know that. We don't know where this money's coming from, and that has people very hesitant, and rightfully so, because outside of Phil Knight, who is a multi-billionaire that would go into it knowing $2 billion is what it's going to take to build a stadium and bring a team here. $1.5 billion if you're going bare bones. But if you're talking, you're going in feeling comfortable and wanting to field a farm system that is competent and a team that's competent, $2 billion. That's what it's going to take.
Well, baseball, I mean, I'll tell you again. I mean, Ridgefield, Washington is getting a new baseball team, just like Hillsboro, and you have a whole leagues of baseball being around here. Do we really need to know who has the money? Because I know the money's out there. Could they be local person or could they be outside businessmen, a group that have done that? Either way,
look,
it doesn't matter.
No, it won't. And something's going to happen soon. Something is going to happen soon because there is land that's being moved in upon here, and that fourth location is, it could be a doozy for people downtown on the river site that there we know of three. Terminal 2, the Portland Public Schools, and then the ESCO up in Northwest Portland. Those, we know those three sites. There's a fourth location that they're eyeing right now. as time goes on, they're getting closer and closer to purchasing that land, and then we're going to start finding out who these investors right. are. It could be a group of Chinese billionaires, for could all
be.
We know.
Yeah.
It could be, you know, Phil Knight. It could be Jeff Bezos. I don't know who it is. We don't know who it is. It could be a pool of billionaires. We don't know, but they feel very comfortable with the fact that they've got that $1.5 to $2 billion.
And what do we know about Major League Baseball in two cities right now? They're reeling. Tampa Bay and Oakland. They're reeling.
And this was a last-ditch yeah. effort by Tampa.
And we've seen it happen. It played out. It played out when Seattle tried to purchase the Sacramento Kings, and it came to fruition that somebody jumped in, and then Kevin Johnson, the mayor, saved that franchise, which is fine. You saved it for a dumpster fire of a city. That's fine if you want to stay in Sacramento. But Sacramento can't touch mm-hmm. Portland. It couldn't even wipe its backside.
Oh.
It can't. Portland, it's so much better of a city. I can't even put it into words.
Just yeah. doesn't rain as much.
Yeah.
That doesn't give me anything. It does nothing.
Well, you know, if we're just comparing cities, some people go for weather.
Yes.
Yeah, if you like that.
Buck didn't, though.
You like the
snow? No, I came up
Buck's
here. I like
a real
the rain.
Man. He's like,
yeah.
rain don't bother me none. So he moved right up here. Oh, by the way, Stuart Sternberg is the owner of the Rays. He has a net worth of $800 million.
Which is not very much. The team.
That is $92 million less than the stadium he wants to build with corporate sponsorship.
Made his fortune in the finance world. Was a partner at Goldman Sachs.
Mm.
He's losing that team, folks. Somewhere, some way, somehow. Major League Baseball is not allowing that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, here's a question. Would expansion be cheaper than buying an actual franchise from a guy?
Half $1 billion is the expansion fee.
Well, that's what
Somewhere
we think
there.
It is.
It could be more.
Because
be.
When you look at the average salaries of each team, half $1 billion would kind of be cheap, you know?
Yeah.
How much is the actual expansion fee going
to
be?
Maybe we have more time to, I know we're up against it a little bit, but because with the beginning of the show, we're talking about sports out
this
of the
gets
gate.
Me
which,
excited.
You know, it does too. I heard Dirt and Sprague yesterday talk about, I think it was Dan Shaughnessy that put out the Baseball's Dying article.
Okay.
Okay. Clickbait, hot takes, more. I mean, I get it. Writers want to do that kind of stuff now, but the regional connection of baseball and the ticket sales and everything. Just look at the Mariners for an example. All you have to do is yeah. sniff some wins. And that stadium at Safeco sold out.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, baseball's dying.
Don't we hear baseball's dying like every 3 months?
Every yes, 3 months. And nobody wants to watch baseball. It's too slow. We need all these other things. You know,
the
those
shift
are
is killing
only
baseball.
Old, only the olds. Only guys that go to the field with a newspaper and a box score and write it down, watch baseball. That's not true.
Yeah.
Just go out to any tournament at Hillsborough Stadium and watch baseball.
Well, go
let
to
me know if anybody's interested in it.
Just go to a Hops game.
Yeah, Hops game
see
was
how
a blast.
Many, how many young kids are there?
Yeah,
you know,
running around. But baseball's dying. It's a dead sport. Well, soccer's so much better. Sorry, I got
somebody's
got
to say something about it. You know,
yeah, you got to write something.
Well, right now all of our sports are dying. The yes. NFL is dying. NBA
needs to be changed.
You don't have any. It's God. The Warriors and everybody else. It's dying. Baseball's been
cats and
dying
dogs
for 20 years.
Living together. Mass hysteria.
But soccer's on the rise.
Soccer's rising. So,
why? Wait. How is this happening?
Future.
How? So lacrosse and soccer are the sports of the future.
Football viewership is gone.
What? How is this happening?
And after those Winter Olympics, we really might be heading in the right direction on curling finally.
Woo! What's going on here? I don't understand it. Wait, I have a follow-up. I know we are up against it, but I have a follow-up to something Buck just said. But we got to get the show on the road.
Curling?
I remember it was just like yesterday.
On this date in sports history, 1914, arguably the best baseball player ever, Babe Ruth, debuted for the Boston Red Sox.
Ooh, I got one too. You go.
And then, on this day in 1985, arguably the best athlete ever to play baseball signed his contract with the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah.
Bo Jackson.
And then one of my favorite pitchers of all time in 1985. Actually, mm-hmm. Bo Jackson was 87 on this day.
Oh, 87?
Yeah. In 1985, Nolan Ryan hit 4,000 strikeouts.
Wow.
And who knew he'd be pitching almost 8 years later and get 5,000 strikeouts.
Okay, here is my question. I saw somebody say, has any has any player been wasted more, an all-time great, than Mike Trout with the Angels in their prime? Has any star's prime been wasted more than Mike Trout with the Angels? And the answer was Nolan Ryan with the Angels from 72 to 79. How they were like the Angels have wasted arguably two of the best players ever to play. They've wasted their careers.
Yeah, no, by the way, Nolan Ryan didn't know anything about pitching, did he? Texas Rangers?
No.
Right?
No.
Get rid of him. How many attempts have you been back since?
None.
Zero.
None. Worst record in the AL West.
Yep.
Okay, we have some NBA chatter to get to and a question for you about curling. 616 on the Fan. I drive a million miles. You're Wang Chungin.
I was doing my Carlton on as soon as this came on.
Have you seen what the police officers are doing?
Hands 90 degrees to the side. Slide. Back and forth.
Have you seen what the police officers are doing with the lip sync? Whatever challenges that they do.
All police officers or nationwide?
Like police departments are challenging each other to do
another viral
lip sync competitions. Yeah.
Of
it's
anything?
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Justin Bieber songs?
No, it's like choose your own adventure. But Norfolk, Virginia?
Norfolk.
They did a. Buck. Get ready for
that. Hey, that's the name of the city.
Yeah, that's where the Navy is.
That their police department did one to Bruno Mars.
Which song?
Uptown Funk.
Okay.
And like it was like the entire city participated. Ooh. It was ridiculous. But Longview Police, they Rickrolled people. They did Rick Astley. I think it was Longview.
I caught a little Rick Astley the other day.
Never gonna get you.
Jeez, gosh, it took me back to the 80s.
Okay, Buck, you mentioned curling. Do you remember when we talked about curling, Cam, during the Winter Olympics and how the local Portland curling place was booked out through the summer?
I didn't hear anything. All I remember was hot Russian women curling. That's the only thing you mentioned to me, and I was done. I was lost at that point.
You don't
point.
Remember the glorious Andy Reid lookalike who took home gold?
Yeah.
No, I just remember you telling Minnesota. Me to Google a Russian lady that was on the curling team.
She was hot.
There's more than that.
But... we were talking about how, like, are people going to go out and start curling? And there's one place to do it out in, like, Beaverton or Tigard. And, like, the reports were it was booked out through the summer from the Winter Olympics all the way through the summer.
Popular.
I'm wondering if people just, like, are like, yeah, I'm done with it now. It's not, I don't really want to go to the curling place in July. Although,
when it's hot, why wouldn't you want to go curling? It's got to be cold.
Great point. Great point.
You don't like being cold, but if it was hot, would you go curling?
To be refreshed? Yes.
Would you wear shorts?
No.
And I would wear shorts and my Reefs, because my Reefs would still slide.
I would wear my 1990s tearaway pants, like basketball. Remember when those were actually acceptable to wear in public? Like people would buy the tearaway pants and like you'd wear them to
class. Who are those people?
Class. Well, probably you, because you probably never just wore sweats your whole life.
I'm a sweats guy. Very comfortable pants person.
Yeah, I definitely remember those. They were really popular in middle school, and they had to institute a policy in my middle school that you had to wear basketball shorts under your tearaway pants because the people thought it was really funny to just grab a handful and run by during, like,
and between the Fruit of the Looms fully exposed.
Yeah, exactly.
Whitey tighties, old Joe Boxer.
Yeah,
action.
When did you cross over? Cross over to the boxers, or are you still tighty whities?
No, right when I hit middle school, I think.
Yeah, I hit it.
Sixth grade was for me too.
Sixth grade.
Abercrombie and Fitch, polka dot boxers. Mm. I think were the.
I hit it in mid high school. That's when I hit it.
You remember when girls would wear boxers?
Yes, I was just gonna say that.
So, that was
they
a
wore
weird
their
trend.
Underwear and then they wore men's boxers with the slit in the front, you know, just in case for the
little pee hole.
Well, yeah, you got to go to the bathroom. I'm like, what are they doing? And our girls would wear wrestling shoes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Remember the conversation
that is
I had?
Definitely.
Remember when girls wore wrestling shoes?
No, but that's definitely country bumpkin.
You don't. No, it's not.
That's how you know you live in the country. When
your school is known for like 15 wrestling state championships, even the girls sport, it was very trendy.
Yeah.
So they'd clean the sweep out with their dip and then. I'm not talking a dip in the pool. I'm talking a nicotine dip.
Little Copenhagen.
Nothing better than
a little Copenhagen
than a hottie,
snuff.
The hottie with a fat lip.
I worked with a actually, you might know. Did you know Dennis Brown at all? Former Husky.
Defensive lineman, played
with the Niners.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, he was an analyst for us with 49ers coverage, and he said he dated a softball catcher when he was in college up at UW. And,
oh, boy.
And they dipped together.
Mm. Which softball catcher? Because I don't know this. I'll have to ask my wife, because she was, of course, in the 90s.
She was
on the original
80s.
Softball team that started, very first one in 1993. Very first team. And she would tell me some of the girls would dip. Mm. Mine did not.
There you go.
Yeah, I remember going to we went camping in college, and one of the softball players was with us, and she brought out her can of chew, and...
What was it? What can?
I think it was like Rooster.
What is Rooster? I've never heard of Rooster.
I think it's a cheap can.
Is it the mint? What is it called
mint.
If it's mint?
It's like mint.
No. What, like Copenhagen, it's all ground up, or is it like Red Man? Like my dad would have...
Oh, like
would
have Shaw Levi Garrett snuff?
He would have
You're
Levi
talking
Garrett.
Fine cut?
Yeah, fine cut.
Yeah.
You should know this because you used to dip.
Long
or do
cut,
you still
fine
dip?
Cut, and either then way. You have just tobacco.
My dad was a Levi Garrett and Red Man.
Yeah, out of the bag.
Yeah, right out of the bag. Just like big league. I thought it was big league chew till he said, yeah, put that in there.
I learned from that movie, Little Big League, they had the closer Blackout Gatling, and he took that big wad of chaw and he wrapped it in bubble gum
and
tried
it. Yeah,
yeah, so that inspired me to try it when I got older, which I'm sure was not the point of that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as it was better than regular tobacco.
Hey, if you're married to anybody out there and she dips, good for you.
good for her to have a
good for her and good for you.
I guess.
It's a special kind. That's a special kind of lady. You know, she parties.
With two R's.
She
parties.
Is that a stereotype we're trying to say?
Yes.
Fair with that.
Yep. Oh, but anyways, the softball player, she took like a handful out, and we were just like, whoa!
Get the whole can in there?
She was last person standing around the campfire that night. She was a party animal.
Ooh, that text just bad visual.
What? What? I don't know what you're talking about. Okay.
In his tearaways.
Oh. Oh, wow. Jeez.
It's not a commando situation. Is
I'm wondering if you got caught at your school, do you think that they were going tearaways and commando?
Yeah. 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 I mean,
if you went commando on tearaways, you wanted to get caught.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of breathability there. Okay. Let's get back on the sports train here, shall we? Probably not. It's a Wednesday. Have you ever said anything regrettable to a coach or maybe a superior? That happened last night in Major League Baseball. The F-bomb dropped at a manager. Here's Buck with SportsCenter.
Let's get texty.
I left a message.
A message? What number did you call?
2-4-9-5-6-7-8.
I can't hear you. You're trailing off. And did I catch a niner in there? Were you calling from a walkie-talkie?
No, it was cordless.
Text us now at 55305. Message and data rates may apply.
Just want to leave my number. Anyway, I think that was weird or desperate.
This is Textual Relations on the show that likes to be over-text. Dusty and Cam in the morning on 1080.
The brain of that person to actually say that?
The Fan.
55305. That is the Better You Today text line. Let's get texty, folks. Have you ever said anything regrettable to a coach, Mr.
Nope.
Cleland?
No.
I find that very hard to believe.
No. Of course I did. Of course.
We're
human, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
We are. But is it on par with what Ken Giles, the closer for the Houston Astros, said yesterday? Ken Giles has struggled mightily in his time in Houston. And yesterday the Astros went into the ninth inning leading 4-0. And Giles was brought in to close that bad boy out. And he promptly gave up 3 straight singles. And so A.J. Hinch gave him the hook with the bases loaded and no outs. And as he was walking off the mound, Giles looked at Hinch and just said, F you, man, and just stormed off the mound. And A.J. Hinch said afterwards, he goes, he can let me know if it was directed at me. I didn't hear anything, though. You can certainly understand. I'll address it. If it turns out it was at me, we'll talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so that is like a whole deal. Like, you're supposed to have we have these unwritten rules in baseball, but now we have these things where it's direct authority. And those moments are always, you go look back and you reflect on them, and we always have those moments where you're like, gosh, I shouldn't have done that. Did you have any of those moments when you were playing, though?
Yeah, I had a major. I mean, I've told this story at certain times in my life with times, but I think I've shared it on the show. It was my senior year, and it was right after we played San Diego State, and we were playing, and we were 3-0. We started 3-0, and I'm coming into the at the end of the game. We meet in the room going up the tunnel, and I'm infuriated for some reason because we beat them like 30 to 3 or 3, something like that, 38-3. I can't remember the exact score. But anyway, I only had two targets, one thrown at me. And I was in that mode of, man, come on, I know I can help the team more. But selfishly, it's one of those moments. Scott Linehan, coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys, was my offensive coordinator in college. And I remember he stuck his hand out. I was walking out, and he looked at me, and he goes, Cam, hey, man, we're going to try to get you the ball more. And that selfish, idiot, moronic senior that gets – you go through these times in life, you go, God, if I could take one thing back. I remember looking him dead in the eye and go, I didn't say F you or anything like that. I just looked at him and said, that's BS. And I said, you, it's your fault. And walked away.
Wow.
And he stuck. And then I remember that specifically. And it took that moment. And I go, I look back on that. That's a deciding factor for me that I've always gone is like one of the worst things I've ever done in sports or as a teammate. Would it totally just put myself and worried about stats and all those things that you think about as a young kid, and you go, what an idiot. Took me probably 4 more years to figure out how big a mistake that was. And I go, it's hugely regrettable.
So it took you 4 years to figure out?
I tried to. I mean,
a mistake?
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is I walked up to him later and said, oh, I'm an idiot. I'm sorry, coach. But I could tell he never got over that. You know, and it took me years to try to figure that. In fact, I get into my late 30s and I go, what an idiot.
Right. And it's one of those things you can't take back.
And that's at a college level. And I can't at the pro level. These guys do this stuff all the time. I mean, I've seen coaches fight. And those guys always are ones that are so volatile. But you go, oh, it's the heat of the competition. Guys are arguing. It's like buddies. It's like people. You're so close to them. It's like family. Mm-hmm. It is sometimes. But Giles, I would say, that guy's crazy. He punches himself in the face.
Yeah.
You know, to F-bomb your own coach. I've never done that in my life, ever.
Yeah, it shouldn't be surprising that the guy that F-bombed his coach is the same man that earlier this season punched himself in the jaw.
Yeah, and if you missed that, that was basically the same deal where the Astros were dominating and then he blew it. Mm-hmm. And he ended up, you know, punching himself in the face over and over and over again, walking off the mound. And when you have those regrettable moments, though, it's almost... Can you repair that fence? I mean, when you go down that road of saying F you say at the pro level, it's different than in college.
Way different in college.
So you think that like something like AJ Hinch is like, we'll certainly sort it out and we'll talk about it. But
yeah.
Those things are easier to get over. Why does it matter? And why is it so much easier? Just like it could be 2 years removed from when you're in college to when you're a professional to treat your coach like that.
I still think there's a respect level you have to have. You really got to have, not only just growing up through, and I'm seeing younger kids do it. Like I've been questioned by young kids. I've been questioned by parents all the time, the way they talk back and they do that. I would have never, ever have done that when I was a younger player, ever in my life. If I would have told my dad what I did, oh my gosh. You know, I wouldn't have sat down for a month. Those are those types of things where you go, this has trickled all the way up. These guys have grown up questioning authority. And now you have those kind of players. Professionally, though, you're a paid pro. The coach, majority of times now in pro sports, is paid 100% less, it feels like, than those players.
Yeah.
Players are entitled to say, I'm better than you. I know what I'm doing. I'm more valuable than you. I could care less what you're saying. Unless you hold the power and the respect like... coaches, Bill Belichick, coaches that have that kind of, you know, Mike McCarthy, that carry the kind of big stick. Doesn't matter about your paycheck. It's about what I can control. You know, Andy Reid, those types of guys, you're going to act like that, you're going to be gone.
You know, there is almost as if what I'm gathering from you is there's an understanding by professional coaches that every single guy that they are coaching was the best.
Yeah.
At their level. And they were the guy that was supposed to get the ball every single time. And they were the guy who was supposed to be dominating at the line of scrimmage every single time. Mm-hmm. And when you get to this level where you're a professional, everybody else is equal to you, there's almost an understanding by the coaches of, okay, he's got to get used to the fact he's not the biggest and baddest dude every single play, which goes back to, like, you know, I never had any of those moments where I fired off at a coach in college because I didn't feel I was ever good enough to, you know? And that was kind of, you knew when you were at the college level that you were good enough to do that and you were going to be going on to the next level. As it trickles down further and further, though, what's interesting is when you say you hear it from like 12-year-old kids, there's this sense that I'm good enough to demand that type of, I don't know, unwavering blind support and always getting the ball from your youth coaches. Now.
It's not just that. It's that every young player thinks they're a star.
Yeah.
And they think that they haven't earned anything yet. You didn't go out and practice. You didn't shoot when you got home. You didn't take BP. You didn't go out and hit wiffle balls by yourself. You didn't do anything. But yet you're going to show up at the game, late to the game, and then you're going to sit there and go, Coach, I can pitch. Coach, I can do this. Have you put in any effort? Mm-hmm. That's the difference of youth and as it trickles up. But you're right. Once you get to the highest level in the world, I'm telling you, I want you. And if I'm a coach, I want you to want the ball I want you to make the tackle. I want you to have the block. I don't want you to be passive and go, don't run it this way, coach. No, I don't think I'm going to get it. I want you to be a D-bag sometimes and believe in yourself to the point where it's blind belief, because that's how you have to play. And then as coaches at the highest level, you're going to look at that like Hitch. He's going to walk out and goes, if this guy doesn't want to stay in the game and walks off and just hands me the ball, I know what kind of crazy I'm coaching. Doesn't mean it's right, but I know the guy. I don't want the ball taken from me.
But that exact thing that you say you want in every professional athlete, we hate in every youth athlete.
Yeah.
Why is it you want it at one level but not the other? Like, doesn't that seem counterproductive when we talk about that?
I don't
that?
Know if it does. It's asking a very difficult question, but it's the understanding as if you know something and you believe in yourself, there's a difference between me saying, do you admire when LeBron James talks about himself and admires himself and calls him those things on Twitter and in the world? I'm the greatest. I'm the greatest. Or did you appreciate someone like a Michael Jordan or some of these other great stars who just like a Joe Montana who let you do it?
Mm-hmm.
There is a difference. There's a big difference. I admire LeBron James. I admire younger players that outwardly let their talents show through and don't let their words control. Does that make sense?
Right. But at the same token, you just got done saying that you want that guy who's outwardly
at the pro level, but I don't want that.
No, that's what I'm talking about is where do we draw that line and how do we draw that line to kind of redirect this thing back? Because is it because we see so much more of the videos being replayed on social media all the time over and over again of guys like Giles dropping an FU man to his manager as he comes and pulls him out of the game, mm-hmm. that kids find that acceptable? Or is it the fact that just kids are wired differently these days?
Kids are wired differently, but you're never going to hear me say, oh, look at what Giles did,
mm-hmm.
and then say, what about the kids? No, that's a you problem. If you, as a parent, can't fix that and tell them, this is the example, don't do this, don't do this. If you're going to let your kid act like that, that's a you problem. That's a parent thing. I don't know if we can ever fix that.
No.
But you could have a big mouth and think you're really good and be the worst player on the team.
55305. That is the Better You Today text line. Do you have regrettable blowups at a coach? 643 on the Fan. The Better You Today text line. We're talking blowups on coaches. This texture, I went to high school at a small school where the soccer coach was also the parent of one of the kids. One day at practice, I kicked the ball extremely hard and hit that kid directly in the face. The kid was no good to begin with and didn't even want to be there, but his dad was forcing him. Anyways, the coach went into dad mode immediately and started screaming at me and telling me to run laps. Mm. So I went right back at him and let him have it. I told him his son was no good and didn't deserve to play and didn't even want to play. I ran a lot of laps that season, but I was still the starting center midfielder.
Mm. Went after coach's kid. I like that.
Well, what isn't in there? Do you think he kicked the ball at his face on purpose?
No, I mean, who does that? It doesn't sound like that.
Someone who doesn't like the coach's kid?
Yeah.
somebody who's willing to let the coach know exactly how he feels about him and his son.
Unintentionally sending a message.
This one is good. It says, my soccer coach tried to start me at goalie. I was averaging 3 goals per game as a striker. Sorry, coach, my ankle hurts, can't play. I changed my mind at halftime. I was 12. It wasn't disrespectful. It was probably, sounds like it was just a fear thing. And those are those regrettable moments where you think,
That kind of goes back to the always being like, yes, coach. Okay, I'm going to kind of do whatever he asks you to do. But at 12 years old, questioning the coach on whether or not you should be playing goalie or not. What if you would have been an MLS goalie? You could have been Team USA's goalie.
Oh, man, you're going to
be a better striker.
If they were averaging 3 goals a game, it sounds like they derailed maybe the greatest career in the history of U.S. soccer.
That's a good point. It's a great point.
This could be the second coming of Christian Pulisic, but we'll just never know.
This is not just a crazy question, because I know there's a lot of coaches and parents that are out there, maybe they're listening too, that have had kids or have had something said to them too, where they went, I can't believe they just said that to me, types of that. I feel like there's more of that today than there is ever in the history of how we watch sports. But I think it is, when you asked the question too before we went to break, we see it from pros. How many of you out there are that influenced by pros now? Honestly, do you really look at that?
I think it is a lot.
I know professionals are great and we idolize them, collect their cards, get autographs. But how many of you really look at them and go, be like that guy? I see it from the hand gestures that Steph Curry's done, all those little things and how they act and the antics and what you do. Talking trash. I've never heard more about kids talking trash and just doing that and being disrespectful. But
it's a different world of it. Trash talk has been around forever. Yeah. I mean, Larry Bird was one of the greatest.
But doing it to your coach. That's why I said, you know, I'm starting to trying to stay on track with this, but the way you talk to your coach.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it all comes back to, we see these things and we replay these things, whether it is trash talking or press conference blowups and stuff like that, or those instances like Ken Giles with AJ Hinch last night, where he tells him F you, man, when he's getting pulled out of the game. Those are the things that get replayed over and over and over. Those are the things on SportsCenter's highlights that get sensationalized. Now on social media, they get played more and more. You know, it's like Allen Iverson and his practice rant. Mm-hmm. He gets played every year on like the anniversary of his practice rant. Yeah. We talk about practice. You know, questioning that authority has always been, those are the salacious, you know, things in sports that we prop up. And so as we prop them up more and more, they get more notoriety and kids think it is more acceptable to do.
I can admit one of my biggest faults in sports or just in life is when I feel like I don't respect somebody's opinion or their judgment. Mm-hmm. It's a very difficult thing. I work with it on a daily basis. It started with coaching. If I had a coach that I looked at, and I had a coach at the end of my career with St. Louis, his name was Frank Folks. He was a tight ends coach. He was just a guy. And when I mean just a guy, I mean, had been in the system for like 25 years, just had a little bit of coaching experience, but he was just friends of a friend, knew the system, and he would get up there and I would literally start coaching the position group, write up all the stuff, break down the film study. And at that point in time, I said, I'm not learning anything from this individual. I think it was a nice guy. I did that with a lot of coaches, but if I didn't respect you or think that I could learn something from you, I tuned you out. And it was a waste of my effort. And I still deal with that a lot today. You still have to respect the effort of people and what they're doing. I think that's a really hard thing for a lot of us to deal with.
Right. 55305, better you today, text line. My brother blew up on his high school coach in a basketball game one time, got into it during a timeout. My brother told him he could coach a better game, so the coach let him finish coaching the game. They ended up coming back and winning. He was a nice guy, but he really wasn't that good of a coach. He was a volunteer at a small school. My brother regrets it.
He's a volunteer.
What a story, though.
Yeah.
You imagine being like, yeah, I told my coach he sucked one time, so he said, fine.
You do it.
Why don't you try?
And we ended up winning.
That's my favorite move to do. When a parent heckles or someone starts complaining, I said, all right, your turn. Come on in. You do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You come do this. Remember, I volunteer. You come do it. Get off your blankety blank in your perfect chair and your beautiful little, I don't know, backless chair that you're, you know, little the crowd chairs that they sit in, and they got their little mom blanket that they're sitting on.
Yeah.
Get your backside out here and start showing me how it's done.
Here's an interesting perspective on this conversation that we're having here. I grew up in a tiny town in only one sport. We had summer league baseball. We were all so excited to be able to play a sport. We would have done just about anything a coach said. Wouldn't have dreamed about talking back to a coach's kids. And I think maybe sometimes it comes with the fact that we see that a lot of issues happen with like affluent kids, you know, the spoiled brat kind of thing. And also it goes with like talent and then your access to others, to sports, you know, like there isn't this, it's the only thing to me, because you probably remember this growing up in Cedro Woolies, that there weren't very many opportunities. So when you got out there, it was just like, okay, go. Now we have so many opportunities and so many ways that you can play different sports and all the different sports you can play. There's kind of, I guess, a laissez-faire attitude towards coaching, which is like, yeah, well, I'll just go to my next sport then, or go to the next
team.
Yeah,
I'll go to my next opportunity, my next team. This one is great. It says, I have a theory about this. We used to respect our elders because they had knowledge. That's because throughout history, now kids have the internet and they access anything they want. They don't need us. That's PB1 Dustin. They don't need us, except they need us to pay for everything.
Well, in that theory, though, I mean, it, like with your coach in St. Louis, you were just like, you just kind of outlined it. That guy had experience. He'd been in the league for what, 25 years, like you said. You were just like, no, I don't think you know what you're talking about, right?
It was more about, you just didn't look interested. You know, he's just kind of collecting a check. Mm. And I knew that. And there are a lot of check collectors in life.
So when
when you know what I'm talking about, you know, the dad that just plays and all that, or the coach is just out there kind of, you know, the butter maker.
So when he did try and coach you, you were like,
he did. And I listened and I was respectful. I never degraded him or said anything in front of him. I just was like, all right, I'm going to tune this one out. And then here's a great Better Utility text. This one, I'll end with this one for me. I can't tell you how many Richard Sherman copycats we've had in youth football. It's insane. Literally have to show that Sherman interview every year as an example of how to be a showboat.
Mm. Yeah, they do show it every year?
Yeah.
Well, what about if you want to stop it, maybe not showing that interview? I'm assuming he's talking about the one with Aaron Andrews.
Probably.
Maybe you shouldn't show it. Just be like, guys,
this is how you don't. But
show a bunch of Tim Tebow interviews.
The ability to separate what it is to be a youth and amateur, and that's where we're the lines are now just blurred. Yeah. No matter who you are at age 9 or 10, you think you're Bryce Harper. Because you just put it on YouTube and Twitter and all your Instagram shots at age 9 and 10, you're getting the same viral video of you doing the same crap as that guy. So what's the difference other than 15 years?
There's that line that you just would never cross. I think this comes back to, you know, my dad being a coach, but I was an idiot and I ran my mouth a lot, but never to a coach. Like that was the one place where you wouldn't go. And now it just seems like everybody does it everywhere. And you know what? Richard Sherman, he will blow up on his coaches, but you also, when you hear those coaches talk, they also say he's got a great amount of respect.
Right.
It's just in the heat of the moment, those sorts of things happen.
And we have an issue in sports. Volunteers are going away. Yeah, umpires, officials, referees are going away. Remember, they're all volunteers. Volunteers are leaving the game because of the way you're treated by young players and by families. And the only way to get quality anything is that you won't respect it unless you pay for it.
And there's a lot of umpires that get paid and are just like, no, don't want to do it. Not worth it.
Yep.
Not enough money.
Because they don't want to be a part of that anymore.
All right, 55305. That is fan text line. Blow-ups on coaches that you regret. Send them to us and we'll read your regrets on the air. And maybe it'll be cathartic for everybody involved. All right, coming up next, we've got the hottest sports stories in the world of sports. It's hot and cool next on The Fan. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, 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 O'Reilly
Auto Parts.